Hey, this is Matthew Peterson. Welcome to today's episode. I'm going to talk about the scene, the landscape of dissent and where things are going. I want to describe some dynamics that I see out there that I want to talk about more as we go explicitly. And it's kind of like an episode where we peel back the veil and talk a little bit about the skeletal bones dynamics of what's going on. Which is always an interesting thing to do, I think, and hopefully something that will edify and enlighten you, yourself, and I, as we enter upon this journey. Let's start the show. I want to talk a little bit about the dynamics that are playing out on the right, on the most interesting, in the most interesting parts of the right. And this relates to both, education or ideas and media as well, since both are what shape hearts and minds. And they're inseparably linked at this point because traditional education has fallen apart and the actual education of most people is what they see and witness, you know, on the screens or in the headphones over the course of their lives. And frankly, most of the interesting ideas and discussion, right, has shifted to podcasts and things like that, if we so flatter ourselves. So what do we see out there? There's some trends that you should be aware of. And I want to touch on just what I see when I look at the landscape of reality out there. And the first thing to notice is that the traditional framework of education, which gives you a framework, is what has gone away. There is a framework of thought, a way of thinking about the world, a way of life that is inculcated by education. And that's, coherent in its way and whole, holistic, as they say. But that way of life, that view of the world is, really from wokeism or some kind of materialism. It's pretty boring. Some kind of, leftover, there's no real. Everything's just what you see. Science is boring. Everything's boring. And it's kind of a professional managerial class ideology that's pretty hollow and cut off from any deeper ideas or tradition. Or it's, wokeism, which is the radical ideology of the day, the civil religion of our time, or it's some combination of the two. And so that's what you get, right, from the system, I guess, is what we could call it, from the entire system, from the media and everything else. So in that context, it makes it very difficult if all the institutions are, teaching this, are intrinsically, this is what they know and this is what they're about and this is what America is. What was it that Nancy Pelosi said? Something like, trans people are what America is, or are America, or something like that. Then all of a sudden it becomes really hard to think outside that box. And in order to think outside that box, and that's why you see intellectual life moving to rogue scholars and like one-offing it out there. Michael Millerman doing his own little online university. There's a bunch of these out there, people I know or at least acquaintances, and they've spun off and they're just charging people to for their content, for their teaching, and then you also have people doing a kind of interesting mix of commentary and journalism and philosophy, like Martyr Maid, Daryl Cooper, with his subscribers and his very interesting, deep dives into different topics. I mean, all of this is a product of, it's a result of the reigning institutions going in one direction and basically outlawing any other kind of thought. And so that presents both opportunities and it presents some pitfalls, some downsides that we should acknowledge. And since as I get older, I realize I really was part of a transitional generation coming out of something that was dying into something that has now been born. I can say this, I think, with some degree of certitude that, you know, there are downsides to the direction in which we're going, of course, and it's good to just get those out on the table, because when we think about where we need to go, understanding what we want to avoid is helpful, as well as, you know, trying to get to the positive goal of a sane America, a sane way of life, and education or media being about truth, goodness, and beauty in some way. That's all great to say that's where you want to go, but how do you get there and what are you trying to avoid? So let's think about this. If once you get rid of institutional support for various, you know, for ideas or a framework of looking at the world, how to think about things, you know, what are human beings and how do you treat them? And, you know, what are some basic things that all human beings want and should want and are striving for? You know, when you disagree on stuff like that, it has all kinds of ripple effects. So here's the thing. If your institutions, you know, inculcate these deeper principles and purposes, like what human beings are and therefore what they should try to be, what we're shooting for as a society, you know, very basic, broad stuff, they agree on that. You don't need to teach it explicitly, almost, right? It doesn't matter if you have one class on what the human person is, if the entire institution is basically organized around, certain assumptions about the human being. You don't need to formally teach it. You see what I mean? You don't need to have pure propaganda just banging you over the head on your, you know, television network if all the shows on the network basically tacitly assume, right, certain things are true and certain things aren't, certain things are good and certain things are evil. So what I'm saying is the institution as a whole is what teaches or forms you, you know. It's not like one show convinced you of something at one point in time. It's not like, you know, for instance, America all of a sudden agreed with gay marriage and said, you know, flipped and said, actually, that's a fine idea. And it's only just because they saw one episode of Will and Grace. But over the course of time, right, when the entire media slips in these messages and says, you know, the implication of which is that, of course, you know, gay marriage is a good thing. That's how you change the dial, right? It's not one class, it's not one show. It's the totality of the experience. And it's the whole, you know, media complex. It's the entire university that shapes you. And the way in which you you really shape people is in a sense indirect, because if you really believe what you're saying, everything in your institution is going to be organized around that assumption. So what happens when you're dissenting from, you know, the assumptions of the reigning institution, when you don't think that the assumption of every writer in Los Angeles is correct. In fact, you say that they're lying about human nature and they're lying about this and that. Then all of a sudden you got an enormous problem, because you can't, you don't actually learn in the way that most people imagine they learn. And you're not influenced by, you know, media in the way most people think they're influenced. And this is why people will deny they're influenced by commercials, for instance, and try to say that they, you know, that they'll affirm that they actually know things from school that they learned through reason and logic. Really neither is true. They think that, well, I'm not influenced by, you know, the media, of course, because that seems as if they're taking this poison pill. And their way in which they think they learn things in college is you flatter yourself that I learn these arguments and facts, right? And that's how I know this is true. Well, I kind of doubt that. That is how, you know, when it comes right down to it, you can make arguments, you can you know, use your reason in the broad sense to push forward and see certain things are true and false or good and evil. You can do that. You should do that. But the way in which you actually learn is, again, heavily influenced by the totality of the experience and the assumptions of everyone around you and how the institution itself is organized. And if you think that that's good and you ultimately come out with a good experience, you think, you know what, those assumptions must be true. So you get rid of that. And all of a sudden, people need to make explicit what's usually implicit. Look, you usually don't want an artist or a writer to have to be a philosopher every time they pick up a pen, right? You shouldn't even have to think about what the family is, what human beings are, and what, you know, they're trying to achieve in some broad sense. That's what usually you know, is already given to you in a healthy society or culture, and so it is in ours. But if you're rejecting, again, the notion of the human person, the notion of the family that they're presenting, then all of a sudden you have to explicitly assert, well, what do I believe and why? This is why so many people are adrift today. You know, they know looking out there that this is dreck, that all this stuff that's being presented to them is false in some way. There's something wrong with it. But, you know, in the midst of your life, you have to then go back to first principles and start re-examining, you know, everything, asking philosophic questions, as we might say, you know, questions that are deep, that go long, and that's difficult. But nonetheless, it's true, and that's why you have lots of people in their 50s and 60s, you know, not just out of a hobby kind of interest, but a real deep thirst, looking for people who know stuff about stuff and greedily devouring it when they can find it outside the system. This is what you see happening in, let's call it, dissident media. People are hungry for deeper stuff, and it's actually astounding how the degree to which this is true. You don't have an educated populace who's just sated by, you know, NPR, or National Public Radio, or you know, PBS, public broadcasting, or the equivalent of that today. Now, there's a lot of people who know, like, this is all slanted. This is all. People are starving for, you know, alternatives. So the problem again, though, is that without the institutions, what was assumed can't be assumed anymore. And for most people, like, you kind of take that stuff from the community around you, and you know, you run with it, and you don't have to think about it. You shouldn't have to think about it, but now you do. If you disagree with the reigning ideology, you have to think about everything, or find people who do. So that leads us to the problem. So then what you get is a number of people. And do you want to know if they're sophists, the old word for someone who just sounds good but actually isn't leading you to the truth, or whether they really know stuff about stuff? And the whole problem is, if you know that you don't know and you're looking for knowledge, how do you know who's lying to you and who's not, right? I mean, this is the problem of being a student. If you want to go learn something, that means you don't know stuff. So how do you choose who your teacher is? By definition, right, you don't know as much as they do. So who's actually a real teacher and who just sounds like it? You know, the ancient Greek philosophers, you know, Plato would say, look, as Socrates saying, guy can walk into a town and sound like a great doctor, right? A good actor can sound like a great doctor, you know, or a great politician or whatever, but there actually might not be that. So how do you know? How can you tell? And that's the question. But what you see is a lot of people dissatisfied with the institution. It's as if they walk outside the temple or the museum or the Capitol building with its, you know, big Roman features, and they go out into the public square and they're looking for someone preaching and saying something that's interesting. And they go, and there's different people on each corner, all telling them, this is the way, this is the way, this is the way. So the first thing that people look for is someone who acknowledges how bad things are. That's the first thing they want to know, because that's why they're leaving, you know, the institutional knowledge behind. That's why they're searching, you know, for something new. So the first thing is, you have to show in today's environment that you understand that you see what they see. And that then gets you an in, and people start to listen. You need to know that they, you know, they actually, oh, someone thinks like I do. They understand how bad it is. They know why I'm leaving in my mind the thought of these institutions. Now, of course, you know, consider this, right? I mean, a good sophist could figure that out and realize, yes, this is how I grab people. This is how I take them in because they're dissatisfied, and that gives me an opportunity to grift. But also, anyone who's actually outside, you know, the deal is going to, you know, want to say that and make clear. So that's what, you know, people want. Then there's the question of, you know, why you? And so you have to show that you're outside of the institutions. You understand why they're corrupt. You see what they see. And then, you know, there's a certain amount of charisma or a kind of shtick, right? An image, a personality, a persona that, you know, people are either drawn to or not. And that's just the nature of human beings, right? That's just how we are. So, you know, different people are drawn to different kind of avatars of intellectual descent. And, you know, there's people out there who spend zero time caring about their image and persona, but there's a lot of people who spend a lot of time, you know, caring about it and crafting it and doing it on purpose to gather people in to build their online community of followers, which is now possible because of this growing dissent in the audience. And so what ends up happening, I think, often is that none of these people, or very few of them, are from schools of thought or established kind of broad, you know, views of the world that arise, you know, at a large scale. And what do I mean by this? I mean by this that, you know, it's very hard for any one person to figure out like how they should think about everything, right? I mean, it's just not how it works. Even the great philosophers or theologians usually had, you know, a master, and they were a disciple of that person. And that person took very seriously, you know, a few other people. And so they craft out this kind of school of thought where people are following them over time. And in an institution, there's kind of a mediated way to have arguments about different schools. So different schools of thought can try to take over and argue with each other about certain, you know, contentious issues. And it's not just all madness, though. There's kind of a mediated way in which to do this, by which I mean, you know, there's like a process almost, a little bit more than if it's just free in the public square in front of everyone, and then the people decide who's most popular. It's a little bit more of like an elite process, but, you know, a very rich process where you end up with a school of thought, whether it's in a formal school or not, that has lots of key players that over time hashed out a doctrine or something they think is true about the world that provides you hermeneutic. It provides you a key by which you can kind of see some truths around you. And, you know, that's a process that takes time, ideally, and institutions strengthen whatever this view is over time and let people, you know, hash it out in a way where it's not just kind of here today, gone tomorrow, either the people voted up or down. Does that make sense to you? I mean, that's how ideas develop. You'll have a great, you know, mind, genius say something that's really interesting over time. People congregate to that, and then they start teaching the same thing or permutations, variations on it. And that's how these things, you know, move forward. It's the same in art, right? An artist develops, you know, just an incredible genius, and then others imitators, and then there's imitators of the imitators, and they start to do variations on the theme, et cetera, et cetera. So when you're outside the institutions and you're doing this, it's really, really hard without relying on a school of thought, like a community of people who are, you know, all part of showing you something either about truth and falsity or what's, you know, good and evil or what's beautiful and ugly. I mean, whether it's artistic, ethical, or intellectual, you know, these movements mean that there's a lot of people who are kind of unified in some way moving forward. So, you know, now when you don't have the institutions or they're completely co-opted by wokeness, you don't really have schools of thought out there. What you have instead is people, right? Personas, influencers. even the word itself is sort of a problem, right? I mean, you're defining the person by the fact that they have influence in the abstract. You know, is an influencer good or bad? Well, I guess that depends, right, on who and how they are influencing. Presumably, like, the bigger the influencer you are, the better. Although I guess you could also have people who just focus on quality, not quantity. But, you know, influencer is the term of art of our age. And, you know, the problem with that is not that there's always influencers. But the problem with that is simply that the reason this is happening is because, you know, there is no coherent network or institution that they can live in that would kind of professionalize or enrich their thought or their art. And that makes things, again, really hard. So what you end up getting outside of institutions that would support people is these are one-offs who, you know, influencers who have to go directly to their audience and ultimately be supported by that audience. And that creates a scene in which, you know, can be very beneficial to everybody involved because institutions can be very corrupt. Certainly, if you're in academia, especially, to get out, you know. But if you start becoming the influencer, a couple things happen that you want to be wary of, both as someone in the audience or as someone who seeks to influence. One is the influencer will tend to evolve their thought or their art based on, right, demand, based on what they see the audience likes, what gets the audience riled up. And what gets the audience, you know, signing up, clicking, click like and subscribe. So that tends to push things in certain directions as opposed to others. When it comes to intellectual thought, that usually means that, you know, the more radical thing they say, the more belligerent, sort of angry thing they say, you know, the more people are going to be enthused about it. And it can really change someone. So you can start, you know, you can start here and end up way over here very, very quickly within the space of a few years. And this happens all the time. There are all kinds of influencers, whether you're talking about people in religious circles, you know, philosophic circles, political circles, who they change over time. And, you know, change is fine. It's not fine to change your mind. But, you know, to a certain extent, you're stuck following that audience because you're not supported by an institution, right? A brilliant friend just made a great comment the other day that you know, say in media networks, this was about the Crowder controversy. Stephen Crowder left The Blaze and was looking at the Daily Wire. He's a conservative political commentator. I mean, he's kind of an entertainer, and you know, he is all about independence. You know, people being independent from these networks. But as someone pointed out to me, that the networks themselves actually provide independence. It's perfect. It's so true. The networks themselves can provide independence. So some people are able to say what they want because they're supported by a larger entity. I mean, this is actually why the university, you know, should, this is how it should work. This is why it exists, so that you don't just get your money based on, you know, pleasing the people, but you get your money and you get paid based on, you know, in some sense, something that you think is actually good and true. And you can say those things because you're supported by a larger entity, and you couldn't say them before because you'd have to be worried about being canceled, right? So you know, institutions provide that. And without it, you got this symbiosis between the influencer and their audience, which may or may not be good. So the influencer can go off the rails and change. She was just trying to, whether they realize it or not, keep their audience. And look, this is just normal human nature, right? Anyone who works in any profession or job, and if you look back on your life, you can probably see this, your perspective changes, right? And it's not even as if you see it as just self-interest, but your perspective on things changes as your incentives change. And this can happen imperceptibly over time. And if you're not thinking about it in a serious way, that's just the way of it. You know, I mean, classic example that people would say would be, you know, money and taxes. The more money you have, the more, you know, anti-tax you probably will be as you go through life. If you start out with, you know, not a lot and just as a teenager or whatever, or not really a job, not thinking about money. And then, you know, you go forward and you realize, oh gosh, they're taking this from me, right? This is a problem, right? I mean, that's the kind of, you change your perspective on things. It doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong, but it's human nature, and you need to watch it, because it certainly can be an influence that leads you to conclusions that you shouldn't reach, right? That are actually wrong. You're being seduced by the clicks, the audience, the money that comes with it, or whatever else like that. So that's obviously a problem. And then on the audience side, it's a little different. On the audience side, but the problem is the same. You have, what am I attracted to, right? What kind of entertains me, which is fine. And you end up, remember, again, people are leaving the institutions, so they're lacking this greater influence in their lives about ethics, like what's right and wrong and how they should live, you know, the deep questions, God and the human person and the family, and you know, they're really starving for something serious. So you go out and you're going to look at all the figures in the public square who are barking at you, trying to get you to follow them, or you know, saying this and that, and you're going to go with who's interesting and start listening to them. And that's great. Like, that's fantastic, right? But in so doing that, you know, you're not part of a school of thought where there'd be a kind of natural balance by the fact that, you know, because of the fact that there's a greater whole, there's a greater institution with sort of checks and balances and people who agree and disagree and think about things and with different shades of thought. So you're not getting that holistic experience. You're really going out and looking for solo tutors, as it were, you know, and so these people end up becoming a kind of intellectual avatar, an image that represents an influencer that represents a certain, you know, line of thought for you. And so, you know, again, nothing wrong with this, right? That's just the dynamic. So, you know, if you're upset about, you realize something's really wrong with, you know, liberalism and society as it is, and you start reading this guy, Curtis Yarvin, who starts talking about Mencius Moldbug back in the day on a blog who at length, very lengthy writer, but starts writing about how, you know, turning your mind to things that you never considered before. But because he latches on to what your problem is with what you see around you, and it starts to lead you to the conclusion that, you know what, maybe you've been lied to about monarchy. Maybe you've been lied to about, you know, executive authority, one person ruling. Maybe that made a lot of sense. And maybe actually that could provide more freedom than the system we have now, right? Interesting idea, certainly provocative for any American to hear that, right? So he becomes a kind of avatar of dissent for you. I mean, that's he's a common one. Another one, if we're going to stick with what they call the alt-right, I mean, I think there's just a broad dissident category, Bronze Age pervert, who the pseudonym of the man who wrote Bronze Age Mindset, a self-published book that is extremely interesting and, you know, to some extent popular or successful, at least within a subgroup of especially younger males in America. You know, this is also, you read this and you say, wow, this guy's really explaining to me a lot of what's wrong and pointing to some things that probably are right. You know, and then you know, BAP becomes this Bronze Age pervert, becomes this avatar for a host of, you know, young men and others who are interested in his doctrines because of how they speak to them about what's wrong with where we're at. And I could go on. Like, there's a number of figures, right? Where some of them are, let's take Taylor Marshall, right? Catholic guy, went out on his own to, was a professor, went out to you know, teach people online, kind of had some people with him and podcasts and whatever, but basically is like a solo performance artist, if you will, or commentator, teacher type. And, you know, he's gone from being pretty skeptical, I think, of in the beginning of the Latin Mass and so forth and the traditional Catholicism to I'm not sure if the saying today, like, I'm not sure if the Pope is the Pope and, you know, total Latin master. I love the Latin mass, but I'm not commenting on Taylor. I'm just saying, like, this guy went from 0 to 60, right, in the space of not that long of a time. Very clear with him, for instance, you know, he fits with what I was saying earlier. Certainly it was his audience was moving in this direction. He was speaking to his audience, who is pissed off about, if you're Catholic like I am, angry about what's going on in the church. I mean, no surprise, all the churches are corrupt, Christian churches right now, the mainstream denominations, and there's a lot of problems. Everyone's going along with the spirit of the age. But you can see the dynamic, right, in Marshall as an influencer, that symbiosis between the person and their audience and sort of evolution over time that moves in certain directions as opposed to others. So he becomes a kind of symbol to them of dissent and in religious circles. So these are all examples of people who become a kind of symbol of a dissenting idea, and they throw it out there and they gain a following, and, you know, they have influence, and, you know, are very interesting people. What Yarvin, I know a little bit. I mean, I published him for the first time in, I think, in a mainstream anything, at the American Mind when I was at Claremont, as well as Bronze Age Pervert. And one of Taylor Marshall's, guy used to work with Taylor Marshall as well. This is over the last 4 or 5 years. What I sought to do, because of the way the environment is just to show people the panoply of ideas, right? The all the stuff that was going on that you wouldn't have seen in mainstream thought or journals or whatever, and just give people a vision of look at all this energy, look at what all these people are saying, and, you know, of course we got in a lot of trouble for that, but good kind of trouble. I have no regrets, of course. And what I was trying to do, and I think succeeded in, was show that there's a broad coalition of many groups that are all dissenting against, you know, the current thing or the mode of thought that is in all the institutions, and to explore what that coalition looked like. And then the next step would be to lead it in some way forward, even though it doesn't want to be led. But so here's the problem, right? The problem is that this all leads to the problem and to the culmination of what I want to say here. You see now you have all these, you know, these influencers in the realm of ideas that become symbols or images of intellectual lines of thought, but there is no real school of thought, right? Because there are no schools to speak of. So you have these one-off preachers in the public square right now, sort of preparing the way for something new. So the next step would be to build a coalition, to build a school, and to hammer that out. And in order to do that, you have to be above any one of these people. Because, look, the downside is, and not to say this necessarily applies to anyone I've mentioned, but it certainly could apply. It's plausible to me. The downside is that a lot of times someone will come up and say something and they'll have like 1 or 2, 3 lines of thought, which is a lot to say intelligently in a way that people follow you and listen. And it kind of like peters out after a while, though, because they said their piece and it doesn't speak to the moment anymore. And I feel like, you know, when that happens, then what do you do? Well, it's kind of like you got to create beefs like a rap star, go back and forth with different camps, which is kind of what you see now. You see people, you know, beefing with each other online, all these subgroups going back and forth. I find it tiresome. I find it real tiresome, maybe just because I'm getting old, but also I feel like I'm in my prime and, you know, I got, 20, 30 years here to do what I can. I'm just entering the zone where things are going to get really interesting in terms of what I'm doing and building. And I don't have time for this. I mean, you know, it's going to happen. They're going to go back and forth. People are trying to, you know, rally people to their side, keep people on their side, keep up the momentum. And so they fight and they purity spiral. So you see all these people fighting and saying, well, I'm the real, you know, I'm the real gangster. I'm the real this, I'm the real that. And this person is a fed, you know, this person is a fake. And it's a very odd thing when you think about the seriousness of the topics everyone is discussing. But it's not an odd thing when you think about the context, which is, again, we're outside of institutions, we're in the dirty public square, and it's just influencers trying to shout to the crowd to say, hey, follow me, listen to what I'm saying, don't listen to that guy over there, on the other, my competitor, you know, across the street, you know, that bastard thinks X, Y, and Z, and he's wrong. And so, again, like, I don't mean to disparage anybody. I would say that all these people can be at their best guides, channels into older, deeper pools of thought that you need to explore and push past sometimes, or take along with you, these people. But they represent, you know, there's something beyond them that the best of them will point you to. Say, hey, look here and look here. None of them are their be all end all, you know? And so they're all fighting and et cetera. And here's the problem. The problem is, I want to get to the part where we build a new coalition. And that's partly the reason I created American Mind and a number of other things in the last 5-6 years, is because first you got to show everyone, you know, these are all the different ideas. These are all the pieces of the puzzle. These are all the different parts of the coalition. You know, the landscape doesn't look like you thought it did. You know, National Review or whoever, like, doesn't understand that landscape. Okay, well, Nate Ochman, there's a few people over there now who do. But, you know, the world as you thought it exists doesn't exist. Let me show you the world as it does exist. And the power in doing that is, I'll let you in on a little secret, which is not so secret. The power of doing that is that then you become the framer of the framework. I just gave you a gold nugget. Did you hear that? So what you do is you're the person who has the stones, who has the bravery and the capacity to graciously host the party with all the different players and show the audience all the different players. When you can be the big man on campus that way and not be upset by, you know, everyone, each one of these people thinking that God's gift to the world and, you know, the smartest person, and it's like leading professors, right? You can't lead professors if you can't look at them in the eye or see them looking you in the eye and know they're thinking, I'm better than you, I'm smarter than you, and whatever, and how I can't believe I'm having to have this conversation. You can't lead them if that bothers you at all, right? If that bothers you, you're in the wrong job. You have to understand the entire time, like, how do I get this guy to do what I need him to do? Very similar here. I mean, these are all, you know, a lot of them are not team players. These are all, you know, sort of idiosyncratic types. Some of them, you know, can work well as a team. A lot of them can't, whatever. But they're all out there. How do you, if you're the one who puts them all together and you don't get exercised about their beefs or whatever, or offended, oh my gosh, this person said this, and so we can't have, if you're not purity spiraling, right, then all of a sudden you become the framer of the panel discussion. You see what I mean? You host the panel. And that, to some degree, is what American Mind did. I've done this multiple times in my life in media in different ways. Now, but then all of a sudden, you know, you're the place that people are going to go to and end up trusting, because you they see that you must see the landscape, and you're going to provide them all the interesting things that they're interested in. Now, the next step is to build the coalition and lead it forward. The next step would be to start to pick out the themes, and this is what, like, the real producer does in, say, like a creative producer in a movie, or this is what the real college president does, who's actually smart, which is, of course, like, there's probably only two of them, but whatever, existing now. But it's what can be done. Because then you're actually weaving together. This is what the statesman does. You're actually weaving everything together. You're drawing out certain themes and de-emphasizing others. And what you end up doing is putting a coalition together that has a certain coherence to it. And then you marshal that thing into battle, or into intellectually or otherwise. So that's how I see the scene now. So the scene now is, it can be very strange if you know, you haven't been following along online, but what you see is people, you know, trying to be relevant, influencers trying to be relevant in various ways, yelling and shouting, and I think that the demand is there. So There's going to be more of this. But what I think will happen in a good way is that there'll be, a lot of smart people doing more of this kind of thing, but working together and ultimately creating or reforming institutions that already exist to make them awesome and make them the next mainstream, at least for half the country. So what I mean by that is people who are dissenting now are outcasts, right? But there's a certain amount of energy to it. Forget what people call the alt-right stuff and just take the vaccine. There were people meeting in bars, like quietly discussing this in blue areas. There were people, scrolling Twitter looking for anyone who dissented on the vaccines and this kind of thing. I mean, there's a lot of energy behind it. There was a lot of energy behind the last few years. That's the kind of thing that, needs to be channeled into alternative institutions. The next step is to build the coalition. The next step is to build the institution. And that means large businesses, et cetera, et cetera. Very similar to 60s and 70s dissent on the left that went mainstream and sold out, quote unquote. I mean, this is something hilarious about me. I don't think that I'm not down with the grift. I mean, my career, I think, makes that pretty clear. I wasn't making money off of politics or whatever. I mean, local politics, okay. I did political consulting in some fashion for private entities in a way that I thought was pretty Batman-esque good. But I'm not sitting here. I wasn't sitting here making a pile of money on education and politics. But I do think that for what's needed next, if you don't make money, you're a grift. I mean, we need institutions that actually reach an audience. Like in media, if you're not making money, right, because people aren't paying attention, then you suck. You probably suck. Now, you might be some kind of genius, whatever, and have something beautiful. People hasn't caught on yet, and you need some kind of patron. Okay, that's fine. That exists. Totally acknowledge it. But there's a certain element to it where it's not selling out at this point if you take dissenting ideas against the regime and create new institutions that actually work and new businesses that actually work. That's actually a sign of your success. So the new commercial cultural movement that I'm talking about, I mean, it's not a one-on-one correlation, but if you're successful, for instance, with a new dating app that actually, for God's sakes, brings people together and doesn't, runs against the Tinderization of America, you deserve, like, that's the sign of your success will be actually making money, right? So very, very different environment in which we're going. And the next step is exactly that. The next step is revenue generating institutions, which is what you saw in the 60s and 70s dissent going mainstream, such that mainstream media outlets, whether they were, written stuff for the smarties or, the video stuff for everybody, including the smarties, that's what happened. You transferred that dissenting energy into mainstream institutions. That's what the left did. That's what we're going to do. That's what we're doing now. And that means that, a lot of this, a lot of the more amateur hour moments of the last few years are going to, they're going to increase because there's going to be more and more players in the space. But I think the focal point or the attention of the audiences is going to move past, a lot of the crazier parts of what's going on now. And that'll be sad. And people will say, things sold out and are not as interesting anymore. But I think ultimately they will be more interesting because there will be a broader coalition that more people recognize as such. They'll see parts of it. They'll see what it is. And they'll see woven together in new media or, reformed media outfits of dissent. They'll see broader and more clearer and crisper pictures of of how to both dissent against the reigning ideology and, an argument and ultimately a picture emerging of what we're willing to fight for together against that, that way of life that draws us together, that is possible if we band together in the here and now for ourselves and our children, America or a version of America, or even a part of America, I'll take that, that is moving in a very different direction from the wokeness, and one in which you know, family is understood to be the basic building block of civilization, that, you know, in commerce and culture, is moving towards civic health, civilizational health, and civic renewal in a very, in a serious way, and has some broad-based agreement on, you know, what right and wrong is, what how we should live our lives and the ways that will make us, you know, happy and thriving and fulfilled. I mean, that has to be done. That has to be what we're trying to do. Certainly what I'm trying to do. And I think that there are many people out there who are, you know, influencers who want to move in that same direction. And so ultimately, you know, the new institutions, the reformed institutions aren't going to be scary and, you know, the man putting anyone down. They're going to be exciting as hell. And they're going to make a ton of money because they're going to be, you know, the new Fox. They're going to be successful because they actually address what's going on. And that will broaden out, you know, dissent into a force that can actually change things or fend off this madness. Hey, I hope you enjoyed this today. I, as always, like and subscribe, as they say, because I suppose I'm an influencer, really? One influencer in a world. Go like and subscribe. Write a review. It helps. That's what they tell me. That's what they tell me. And I hate having to say it, but yet I do. I just do what they tell me. Sad. Sad, really. I wanted to tease an idea just at the very end for all you hardcore listeners. I'm going to announce soon, and it's not just me. It's you know, James Polis, Nate Fisher, a number of others have been talking about this, driving this forward. But with them, I'm going to announce something called a Digital Rights Alliance soon. And this is really going to coordinate with the top institutions, orgs, and you know, thought leaders, quote unquote, throughout the country. And ultimately, you consumers, as a consumers union, protecting you from and representing you to big tech. This is something we've thought about for a while in very thoughtful ways. We have, you know, a lot of the most thoughtful people, I think, on these topics are our friends or part of our group. So I want to tease that Digital Rights Alliance and just encourage you to go to return.life and check out what they're doing there. We recently brought on John Stokes. You can follow him on Twitter. J-O-N is how you spell the first name. John Stokes. And if you go to return.life, you can see some of the things that they're doing over there. And it should be very interesting if you're interested in technology at all and how it's affecting us. In any event, that is enough for today. As always, check out newfounding.com. Poke around, see what we're up to. And look, we need your help. We need your help. We need you promoting what we're doing and sharing some of this stuff with your friends, including this podcast. This is going to be a really exciting year for this podcast. I promise you that. I'm happy to have you with me. As always, I'm grateful. So do your part, say your prayers, and stay limber. We need you healthy. We need you strong. We need you sane. Have a good one.